This is Late at Night,
a 24-minute podcast offering comedy, commentary, and conversation.
We will also feature the occasional guest, touch on the arts, and every so often, break into song. I'm Nick.
And I'm Laura. Thanks for tuning in.
Welcome back to another episode of Late at Night, everybody.
Hi.
Tonight's episode lands on February 14th, and we all know what that means. Another bullshit made-up holiday which has no meaning, no value. Tonight we're coming to you from a remote beach town in the southern coast of New Jersey. Weather is currently goddamn freezing. Laura and I had a chance to go outside, walk on the beach earlier tonight with our loved ones. And just as quickly as we stepped outside, we stepped the hell right back in. Tonight, and every night, we're posting our podcast at midnight, or as I like to call it, the antinoon. The pressure of the report card. It was report card day. I was in the third grade, and my brother, 2 years older, had just achieved stellar marks on his report card. Maybe it was straight A's. I don't quite remember it being that. There could have been a B plus in there somewhere, but either way, it was treated by the family as if it were just solid gold. And my mother rewarded him with a $20 bill for this fine achievement of his. And when I saw this, I remember thinking to myself, oh, hey, cool, you get money for a report card? Mom, where's mine? And my mother, this is how sweet she is, she gave me $1. Which, from a parental standpoint, was pretty smart of her because it was the best she could do in the moment, at least. Because I put her on the spot in front of my other brother, who actually earned a good report card, which was $20 worthy, I suppose. So she didn't want to give me nothing because she could see that I innocently didn't grasp the concept of positive reinforcement. But at the same time, she couldn't give me the same thing that she gave my brother because that would have undermined his hard work and his achievement. And, you know, and plus, my brother was right there. He was seeing the whole thing. He knew he had a better report card than I did. We all knew he had a better report card than me. I didn't really even know what a report card was. In fact, I had to be sat down and told that I actually wasn't doing well in school. I had no idea what doing well in school was. And that's how unaware of my academic surroundings I was. So earning good grades and getting a cash reward for it was definitely a concept that I didn't quite understand. And that would actually be a theme that I held dear to my heart throughout the rest of my academic career, my underachieving academic career. When I finally understood why I didn't get that $20, why I didn't earn the $20 reward, I immediately realized that I must have put my mother in a very tough position when I asked her for that money. Because like I said, she didn't want to be mean to me. She didn't want to give me nothing. Oh, bless her heart, I thought to myself when I finally looked back on it as an adult. I think to myself that she didn't want to hurt my feelings. She didn't want to hurt my brother's feelings. And she explained this to me because, of course, I asked why. I asked why I only got $1. Because even a small child can identify an unequal distribution of the wealth. I mean, that's all kids do. That's all kids do. They look at what the other kid has, and if you don't have the same, it's a fucking bloody nightmare. It's a mess. You scream bloody murder. And we're such little brats as kids. We're such little bastards. We're entitled. We have to have it all. And when my mom explained to me why I only got $1 and not $20, it did hurt a little. Mostly because I felt blameless for it. I felt blameless. I wasn't getting to share in something good because I didn't fulfill a task that I really had no idea was being asked of me in the first place. And that is performing in school. I didn't know I was supposed to get a good report card because, hell, I didn't know what a report card was. I had no idea what it even was. And I was an overly imaginative child. I was artistic and curious, and I was always inside of my own head. And yes, I was a child of ADD. I still might be, although I don't quite remember. Comprehending verbal instruction was always particularly difficult for me. And even more difficult was identifying when somebody was giving me verbal instruction, namely my teachers and parents. And that really was the beginning of the problem. See, if somebody doesn't realize you're even talking to them in the first place because they're lost in space, communication can really only be a downhill struggle from there. Uphill struggle. Is it uphill or downhill? You can coast downhill and it's easy, but if it's an uphill struggle, it's hard. Got it. So I hardly thought it was my faux pas, really. I still don't. So it was hard for me to accept why I didn't get that $20 on that one fateful report card afternoon. But it was even harder for my brother to accept it when his kid brother later kicked his fucking ass and stole that $20 in a fit of jealous retribution.
Hey, Nikki.
Hey, Laura.
I love you.
You know what? I love you, too. I feel the same right back at you.
And you already know that, but I wanted to tell you today.
Well, that's an appropriate thing to say on February 14th, yeah. Isn't it?
I mean, why not?
For reasons we won't underscore.
Cannot. No. I mean, love can be a wonderful thing.
Love is a many splendor thing, that's for sure. And it comes in many shapes and sizes.
Does. It can be painful, too, though, but we don't want to talk about that.
We don't want to talk about it. We'd rather talk about how it comes in sexual forms or platonic forms, sometimes big, sometimes small, sometimes really big. And believe me, sometimes it comes in such a big form you can't fit it in your mouth.
I don't know anything about that.
I don't know what we're talking about all of a sudden. We digress. It is Feb 14, as I like to call it.
Do you? When did that come up?
Just a second ago. Love can come in the form of a heart-shaped box of chocolates, and it can also come in the form of a solitary hand on a cold winter's night. You understand what I'm talking about, Laura?
Now I do.
You understand what I'm trying to say?
Now I'm right with you. Was there like a love story?
A love story that I have?
Or when you were growing up, that sort of defined, like what falling in love meant. Like, what did your parents have a story or?
No, absolutely not. They have a story, I'm sure, but I never got to hear any of it. What about you?
I definitely did, and I don't know what part of it is true, or. I guess it doesn't really matter. It's more that, you know, my parents did have a love story. It was told to me by my dad many times while I was growing up, and almost misleading in a way, because it was so, so very romantic. They met in a cafe, a French cafe.
Yeah.
My dad was performing and kind of just like doing sets at this cafe every hour or so. And
real he was a performer, this guy.
Yeah, he's a that he is. And so he was dating a Danish girl, and apparently he saw my mom across the room, mm-hmm. was having dinner with this Danish girl, put the Danish girl in a cab, walked over to my mom and said, "What's your name?" And she said, "Mary." And he said, "Mary, I'm going to marry you one day." Hmm.
A wordsmith, a man after my own heart. I love him.
And picture, yeah, he's from Tunisia, but lived his life in France. Mm. And he's, you know, has a pretty solid delusions of grandeur. Mm-hmm. Lovely, in a lovely way, times. But so she looks at him like, okay, you're a fucking crazy person. And he says, "What do you do for a living?" And she said, "I'm a teacher." And he got up on stage and made up on the spot a song called L'Institutrice.
Is it a good song?
It's a beautiful song.
What's that mean?
The teacher.
Ah, the teacher.
And, but that is the story. And it's a beautiful story.
That's a hell of a legacy to carry with you.
But that was the only story I knew about what it meant to fall in love, kind of growing up. And that kind of like accompanied by fucking movies.
Well, forget it with the trash that Hollywood puts in your head. If all you know of love is what you see in the movies, then you're going to have a rude awakening when it just doesn't turn out that way in real life.
And it's really hard to, when you come to realize that how much of that story can possibly be true, but you want to hold on to it because it's the story of your parents. And it's like looking at photographs of your parents when you're younger. They're like, they mean so much and they're so romantic.
Yeah.
And probably like as soon as they took the picture, they were like, oh.
Yeah, get it the hell over with, honey. Get the kids in a car. Let's get the hell out of here.
This trip sucks.
I feel fathers usually embellish stories more so than mothers do. I think.
You think so?
I don't know why I think that, but maybe it's just because that's my experience. And then of course the movie Big Fish, where the dad was always lying about the past, and Ewan McGregor never knew what the truth was because
totally.
The dad was high on his own fumes. So as I mentioned earlier in the show, Laura and I are away this weekend in the Jersey Shore. And we kind of have a full house with us this weekend. We brought some friends down here and had a little bit of time to piss around with each other, throw some ideas off each other's asses, you know, just get nutty. And I was telling Laura earlier about this idea I had where pop songs on the radio, and for as long as I can remember, they sing about love, love songs. You know, love songs will never die because love will never die. Well, a lot of these love songs use the phrase make love. And really, what they're talking about, the physical act, is sex. They're talking about having sex. But look at it back in the 20s. Look at it back in Sinatra's era, where to actually come flat out and say have sex in a song or on the radio would have just totally been inappropriate. It would have never flown. Yet look at all these beautiful love songs and just replace make love with have sex, and all of a sudden it becomes a completely unacceptable song. It becomes completely inappropriate. It would never fly, not then, not now. Well, maybe if you listen to certain stations these days, maybe you might hear it. But so Laura and I had a little fun with the piano earlier.
We did.
Close your eyes, make a wish, and blow out the candlelight. For tonight is just your night. We gonna celebrate all through the night. Pour the wine, light the fire. Girl, your wish is my command. I submit to your demands. I will do anything, girl, you need only.
I'll have sex with you like you want me to, and I'll hold you tight, baby, all through the night.
About you, I think about love, and darling, I couldn't live without you and your love. I feel like heaven.
Until all our strength is gone. don't tie. Just let go. I want to feel you in my soul until the sun.
We've got a few friends here, and we decided to ask them a few questions. Not grill them necessarily, unless
just some fun questions. Just some fun,
lighthearted,
simple questions.
What's it like? You know.
I mean, what the hell's wrong with that?
You know? Yeah, there really isn't. So,
good old fashioned camaraderie.
We're gonna call this love quiz. Do you think it's more fun to have sex on the Jersey Shore than it is in Brooklyn?
No.
Brooklyn's more fun.
Yeah, I think so.
So, Nikki.
Indeed.
Do you think that having sex on the Jersey Shore is like more exciting than having sex in Brooklyn?
Depends on what season it is.
Do you think that one or both of you has like an edge in the bedroom?
An edge?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Do you feel like either of you has like an edge in the bedroom?
Yeah, I feel like I do because I'm the stronger one in the relationship.
Obviously.
I'm taller. I'm heavier. I'm smarter, faster, bigger, stronger.
Do you think between you and your partner, one person has the edge over the other?
I think he's got the edge
over me.
Yeah,
you think he's got the edge over you?
Yeah.
Do you think that like either of you has like a bit of an edge in the bedroom? Like something where it's like, whoa, that's like... chill.
Yeah.
What would you do if right at the climax in intercourse, one of your parents came to mind?
Oh, fuck no. Fuck it, would it?
What would you do if, like, if the image of one of your parents came into your mind, like, right in the moment of climax?
What would I do? I'd probably just go with it.
All right, Max, so here's a scenario for you. You're in the bedroom with the old ball and chain. You're in the middle of it. And she reaches for something under the mattress.
Yeah, I know what that is.
You don't know what that is because it's a gun. Okay? She pulls out a gun on your fucking ass.
Yeah.
The first thought that goes through your mind, go.
Way to spice it up, Laura.
Oh! Laura, let me paint you a little scene here that I painted a similar one for your husband.
Okay.
You are hot and heavy in the bed. You're between the sheets.
Mm-hmm.
And you are just making that love. And he reaches under the mattress and pulls out an object, which you see happens to be a gun.
Oh.
And he sticks it to your fucking head. And what is the first thought that comes to mind for you?
First of all, that we came up with the same question.
Independently of one another. We've only been working with each other for
a
few months now.
The bedside drawer and under the mattress is the only thing.
That's the only difference, but here it is. You put me on the spot. Now it's your turn, honey.
So, all right, let me just think about it. Mm-hmm. So he pulls the gun out of the mattress and points it
and
at
just
my
right
head.
At your goddamn head. Yeah.
Fuck, I can't believe I was wrong about this guy.
It's very sweet. It makes me feel like a scumbag for even asking the question in the first place. What about divorce? You see that coming up anytime in the future?
I'm not a very good cook.
Here's another one. Is he a keeper or do you foresee a divorce anytime in the future?
He's a keeper. The New York Times op-ed columnist Frank Bruni wrote a piece a couple of Sundays ago. And certain parts of it keep coming up in my mind, especially as we're talking about life and love. The title of the piece was "Do Gays Unsettle You?" And he starts it off by explaining the feeling of walking down the street with his partner after dinner or a movie. On Manhattan's Upper West Side, where I realized that I assume a gay couple would feel totally comfortable being themselves. When his partner slips his hand in his, he tenses. He feels exposed. he senses a threat. I guess before I go on about it at all, I wanted to know if you feel those things.
You know, on a personal level, no, I never have felt threatened here. I've never felt uneasy in New York. It's one of the great things about New York is that it is so, it's so diverse, it's so multicultural, it's so gay friendly, it's accepting, it's very liberal. And then, of course, you do hear stories in the news about hate crimes still happening in New York.
Mm-hmm.
You know, gay bashing still does happen in New York. In fact, I remember being embarrassed for New York a few years ago when they finally accepted gay marriage. I was thinking,
oh my gosh,
I was
me
thinking
too.
To myself, why so long?
Why?
Why and the hell did it take New York, of all places,
and
so long?
And this isn't
to
a celebration. This?
This
is, I felt the same way. This is embarrassing.
It's kind of an embarrassment. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm happy. Thank you, New York.
Yeah. I mean, it's upsetting for me to think that in any way I may benefit from my relationship or take advantage of, or just take for granted things that I can do, or the ways I can feel and express myself publicly in with my relationship that maybe some of my best friends can't, or that other people feel it's unacceptable. Frank Bruni also pulled these quotes from politicians. I'm going to call them out right now because I'm feeling passionate about this. Rick Santorum, the marriage of two men and two women is no more like the marriage of a man and a woman than a tree is like a car, or a cup of tea is like a basketball. He and Mike Huckabee have said things that I even can't bring myself to repeat. Shame on them. I actually am getting too heated. Hang on.
Take your time.
Anyway, Frank Bruni goes on to mention the importance of the gay rights group GLAAD, or GLAAD, mm-hmm. and their new campaign, I've Got Your Back, which stresses the importance of straight people who most certainly are not offended by their gay friends and openly support the LGBT community to say so and to say it loud and proud.
Fucking A right, and fuck Rick Santorum and every other smug nosed cunt.
Yeah. Fuck him.
Well, that's our show. Thanks again, everybody, for tuning in. Tonight we heard renditions of music by Boyz II Men, I'll Make Love to You, written by Babyface,
and Faith Hill and Tim McGraw,
and Bad Company with I Feel Like Making Love. Thanks again, everybody.
Good night.